charges. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is sheltered by Ecuador in its London embassy as he fights extradition to Sweden, where he is wanted for questioning in a sexual assault case. Mr. Assange says he fears Sweden would send him to the U.S., which could try to prosecute him for a massive leak of diplomatic cables. The 57-year-old Baltasar Garzón became a hero to human rights activists around the world in 1998 when he achieved, through legal channels, the arrest of Augusto Pinochet in London, where the former Chilean military leader had traveled for medical attention. The ex-judge's bold move to bring Augusto Pinochet to Spain to face human rights charges for the kidnapping and killing of Spaniards who lived in Chile were ultimately unsuccessful, but it changed forever the travel habits of former strongmen once accustomed to traveling the world with impunity.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
I try to explain. No, there's no way for me. He said, don't you care not to find out? And I try to explain that if I were originally from Dakar, from wherever I was in Africa, I couldn't find out where it was because my entry into America is a bill of sale. And that stops you from going any further. At some point in our history, I became Baldwin's nigger. That's how I got my name. Now, you know, that really cannot be considered, you know, my fault. It can't be considered the fault of the cat in the British Museum either that he doesn't know that I can't find that out. And I tell you that story to dramatize the nature of the distance created deliberately. Because when I became Baldwin's nigger, it's also very important to point out, I was handcuffed to another man from another tribe whose language I did not speak. We did not know each other. And we could not speak to each other because if we could have spoken to each other, we might have been able to figure out what was happening to us. And if we could have figured out what was happening to us, we might have been able to prevent it. We would have had, in short, a kind of solidarity, which is the kind of identity, which might have allowed us, which might have made the history of slavery very different. The history of slavery in the North American continent, I mean. Well, that didn't happen, and here we are. One of the most terrible things. Well, one of the most difficult things, because it's something which one has, it wants to resist, as he has said, and also to use, is that in fact, whether I like it or not, I am an American. Now, that is not, I'm not Lyndon Johnson, and I'm not saying that as, you know, I am an American. I don't mean that, no. Alas, I mean something very different. But I do mean that I was formed in a certain crucible. My school really was the streets of New York City. My frame of reference was George Washington and John Wayne. No. But I was a child. You know, when a child opens his eyes in the world, he has to use what he sees. There's nothing else to use. And you are formed by what you see, the choices you have to make, and the way you discover what it means to be black in New York. I don't know how you discover what it means to be black in London, but I know what it means, how you discover that in New York, and then throughout the entire country. And I know how, as you grow older, you watch in the richest city in the world, you know, and the most famous, the richest, freest nation in the world, in the Western world. I know how you watch as you grow older, literally, and this is not a figure of speech, the corpses of your brothers and your sisters pile up around you. And not for anything they have done. They were too young to have done anything. In any case, too helpless. But what one does realize is that when you try to stand up and look the world in the face like you had a right to be here, when you do that, without knowing this, the result of it, you have attacked the entire power structure of the Western world. If I one fine day discover that I have been lied to all the years of my life, and my mother and my father were being lied to, if I discover that in fact, though I was bred and bought and sold like a mule, but I never really was a mule. If I discover that I was never really happy picking all that cotton and digging in all those mines to make other people rich, and if I discover that those songs the darkies sang and sing were not just the innocent expressions of a primitive people, but extremely subtle and difficult, dangerous and tragic expressions of what it felt like to be in chains, then by one's presence, simply by the attempt to walk from here to there, you've begun to frighten the white world. They have always known that you were not a mule. They have always known that no one wishes to be a slave. They have always known that the bales of cotton and the textile mills and entire metropolises built on black labor, the black was not doing it out of love. He was doing it under the whip. The threat of the gun, and the even more desperate and subtle threat of the Bible.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian Land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! You guys have no jurisdiction here. Indian
land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright.
They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginal Radio.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
This document tells you why the man owes you reparations. Yeah, honey, you want reparations? Take it. This is reparations. This is how you've been injured. This is how you've been destroyed. You was changed from an African into a Negro. That you've been damaged, injured you, took your name, took your color. I don't have my pretty black color.
Thank you very much.
No, I want an apple. I can't even wear one. A man I'm messed up.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Non-Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, Thought and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earth, send love and solidarity to the original family in this time of strife and struggle, the entire original family, all of us in the Fourth World, and of course, those who are not indigenous but are human, who have a heart. Welcome back. As always, I'm in the studio with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. And, there's a lot happening. It seems that El Baradei, however you pronounce it, is not going to be the new leader of Egypt. It turns out that was a falsehood, even though the information about that is going back and forth. Nobody really knows what the hell is happening. This is journalism in the 21st century, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, and all of you private intelligence lurkers that listen to this show. Nobody knows what the hell is going on. There's so much falsehood, so many goddamn lies, so much, deliberate malfeasance in terms of delivery to the private individual, the citizen. You you can't believe what the hell is being said unless you do the fucking research. So I don't know what else to tell you, brother and sister. You have to get out there and ask the look for news. You have to hunt for news. And I might suggest a Firefox browser. Go to the add-on section and then look for all of the safety add-ons that you can get. Surf the web safely, number one. But two, so that you can install a translator, so that you can start reading the international fucking news. Do you understand what I'm talking about, brother and sister? I want you to start reading the international fucking news that is not in your goddamn language. Now, at all of the sites that I just listed earlier as I was leading into this, we have translation services built in. They're built in. At least with ang-newswire.blogspot.com. We've been with Blogspot for many years. We've had our ups and downs with them, but they've been sticking with us and we've been trying to be fair with them. We wish that they would be fair with us, but as we're seeing here in the mainstream news, it really may not be their fault. So, okay, we understand. We see what world we're living in. We understand. We've read 1984. We've read Animal Farm. We understand. We know. We know. We know that Ayn Rand is being pushed, even though Ayn Rand was living on my goddamn tax dollar. Okay? I was working. I was earning a salary by the time she got on the dole. So, you know, we know all of this. That not that it means any goddamn thing. We know all of this, but it means absolutely nothing. We know that it's, you know, it's not just a controversy. It is a paradox to have a leader who wins a Nobel Peace Prize, but yet is responsible now for how much war and destruction. You know, we see this. We know. I understand. You're not a fool. We understand what the hell is happening. The big question is, what the fuck are we supposed to do? How can we intelligently deal with this? How can we deal with this without, say, being stupid? Without the women and children being put in any kind of peril. You know, how can we do this? You know, because we're marching, it doesn't really seem to do any goddamn thing. 15 million people around the world marched. They say that this was the largest goddamn march in history, at that time anyway, to prevent, underline capital P, to prevent what ended up happening in Afghanistan and Iraq. Did it change anything? Absolutely fucking not, because W. Bush the second said that he would not be swayed by protesters. No politician, it seems, is swayed by protesters. But then you have the other goddamn extreme, which is just that. It's a fucking extreme. And when you use extreme goddamn measures, you get extreme motherfucking results. And I don't support that. I do not goddamn support that. I'm not Gandhi, but I don't goddamn support that. Because what you're stuck with is a whole lot of goddamn mishigas. What you're stuck with is rule by thugs. Now, we're being ruled by thugs as it is. But, you know, they wear suits, they wear cufflinks and tie pins and what have you. And they know how to order champagne at the better places. So we're supposed to defer to this. We're supposed to defer to this. We're supposed to never say no. Now, there's a lot that can be said about Michael Collins, the Irish leader. There's a lot that can be said, especially when you're speaking to the British. There's a lot that can be goddamn said. But you know what, though? When you remove all of the violence, when you remove, you know, the rivalry between he and Karl Brewer, right? When you remove the value and all of that nonsense, there was one thing, at least in the film version anyway, that they make a point of saying. And I think that's also another goddamn point that, you know, Michael Collins was a terrorist. Say what you want. But he used violence. And there you have, I mean, he used widespread violence, right? Now, there was a film made with him with Liam Neeson, and no one seems to have a fucking problem with that. But you look at the film by Mario Van Peebles, which is really weak when you consider what his daddy was doing. But, you know, Mario Van Peebles came out with Panther. Compare Panther to Michael Collins. And you tell me what the difference is, right? There's no film made about Daruba Bin Wahad like this. There's no film made like this about Geronimo Pratt. And obviously, with the way things are going now under the current administration in North America, because, you know, I would say United States versus Canada, but you might as well just say North America, right? Because, you know, Mexico doesn't have any goddamn independence either, right? It is what the fuck it is. You dig what I'm saying? But, you know, let's look at the controversy on how Hollywood can push one particular white extremist, but, you know, the way that, because we forget to say self-defense, don't we? Black man and woman. Don't we forget to say self-defense when we talk about the Black Panther Party for self-defense? And we forget why they came about, that they came about because of police brutality in Oakland, California. Do we even discuss that any goddamn more? No, we don't discuss that anymore. See, we're more worried about which celebrity didn't wear her panties to the next party. See, that's what the fuck we're worried about. That's what the fuck we're worried about. We're more concerned about how much money Jay-Z's making, even though JC ain't doing a goddamn thing for the motherfucking ghetto other than talking about the fucking ghetto as something to rap about in a fucking song. Holy Grail, whatever. I don't give a fuck. He ain't really doing anything to change the situation out there. He's just rapping about it. See, when he's hanging out with his other homie, talking about niggas in Paris, I got no beef with Kanye West. He seems to be like a decent young man. Same thing with JC. He seems to be a decent young man who made a come up. Okay, motherfucking good. I clap for you, my man. But the bottom fucking line is, though, don't talk about the fucking street if you're not going to do nothing for the motherfucking street. There's a lot of brothers out here hurting every 28 goddamn hours. You feel me? Where's it going? What's happening? Every time I see JC's wife, she's a shade lighter. You dig? So is Aldana. Again, no disrespect, but let's be serious. You're putting on blackface to portray the blackest goddamn woman America probably ever motherfucking produced. So what the fuck? What is going on here? You get mad because Paula Deen said nigga? What the fuck, man? I hit nigga on the 3rd Avenue bus every motherfucking day. You know what I'm saying? And if I say anything to these young guys, they want to riff. They want to riff with me, but in the meantime, we live in a city where police brutality is considered so goddamn bad that it's under FBI motherfucking investigation. You dig what I'm saying? The police chief stepped down. You understand what I'm saying? We had an Indian who was walking away from a police officer who was shot to death. You dig what I'm saying? You got nuclear shit leaking into the damn Columbia River in that state. You dig what I'm saying? No, but we're more worried about what the fuck the celebrities are doing. The celebrities ain't fucking thinking about you, brother and sister. They ain't thinking about you at all because they're sipping goddamn champagne at breakfast. They ain't thinking about you. They're having a fucking blunt with their goddamn croissant and shit that morning. They're not thinking about you. Stop worrying about what the fuck they're doing. Worry about what the fuck you're doing. Worry about whether or not you can fucking feed your goddamn self. Worry about whether or not you got medical fucking care that is actually not just respectful, but is actually designed to cure you as opposed to keep you sick. Ask yourself why you can't find goddamn green vegetables in fucking black neighborhoods. Ask yourself about that. And ask yourself why you're calling yourself nigger. Because the white man doesn't need to do it anymore. You do it. So you can get mad with Paula Deen all the fuck you want. I'm gonna tell you something. The more you motherfuckers called yourself nigger, the more that you convinced yourself that it was okay. And that matter of fact that you don't identify as an African. That you don't even identify as an African hyphenated American no goddamn more. You identify as a nigger. And then you want to stop me and ask me, while I'm waiting for the fucking bus, where I gotta get on to have to tolerate that bullshit for 20 fucking 2 minutes, why do you think that the Supreme Court, why do you think they got rid, brother? You know, you're knowledgeable. Why do you think they got rid of the Voting Rights Act, man? And I'm like, hey, do you hear what the fuck I'm hearing right now? If you call yourself a nigga, well, guess what? They treat you like a motherfucking nigga. All you motherfuckers out there talking about goddamn pimping and all that bullshit. If you really know what the fuck is going on, if you act like a bitch, what? Street talk, right? If you act like a bitch, you get treated like a motherfucking bitch. Well, I tell you what, brother and sister, you continue to call yourself a motherfucking nigga, they will treat you like a motherfucking nigga. You continue to call yourself bitch sister, every fucking black man and white man for that goddamn matter, every fucking man in the world will treat you like a fucking bitch. I'm all for fucking artistic expression. I'm all for personal motherfucking liberty and what have you. But if you fucking demean yourself, don't get mad when other fucking people demean you and take away your motherfucking rights by goddamn law. You're sitting around waiting for Oprah Winfrey or fucking Barack Obama to save you. They will not goddamn save you. They're not looking to save you. They're working for somebody else. When are you going to understand this? All these celebrities that you like, I'm not working for you. They're working for themselves. They're not thinking about you, brother and sister. They are not thinking about you. They're not thinking about that hood they came out of. They moved out. They're not thinking about you no more. You are on your own, a priori, a free child in space, and you better understand that. I don't mean to pull the rug from under you, but you have to understand the reality of the world because obviously you don't. Obviously, you're not understanding because you're continuing to do exactly what this man wants you to do. He wants you to implode. When are you going to understand that? Calling yourself a nigger is implosion. That is self-colonialism. You are doing it at this point automatically to yourself. Now, we can continue to blame him, and I will continue to blame him, because that is where it started. But at some goddamn point, we have to start saying no. And that is what I find odd, because the thing about Michael Collins, the one thing I got out of that movie with Liam Neeson, was not the violence. He talked about at a rally early in the film about the right to refuse. And I refuse to be a nigger. How about you? This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. When we come back, we're going to be speaking to Chris Williams. He's got an excellent piece about this subject, and we're going to go further. So please, stay tuned.
What's your radio show? Where are your radio show hosts at? Where are your radio hosts? Where are you at? Where are you at? What's your show? What's it called? Is it the podcast that's non-existent? You know what? When it launches, can I be on? Can I be on? Please. I've never met somebody with a more self-serving, pompous media blowhard that you give Rush Limbaugh a good name.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
दोपहर को कहाँ गई थी?
दोपहर को बाजार गई थी.
पता की नहीं जा सकती थी.
अरे अभी इसमें क्या बताना?
पड़ोसियों से पता चलता है मुझे.
पता चले तो क्या हुआ?
चुप. ये घर मैं बताता हूँ. मुझसे पूछे बगैर कोई काम नहीं होगा इस घर में.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको. बेल बजाओ. घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें. ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल.
Brown, y'all. Yes, this your evening. One more time, we the Axe Hunter Chillin' for get up. Get into it. Get involved. All Hunter Chillin', when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that Hunter to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. Hunter Chillin' know this your the head, fund the body of this your nation and the horse of we station. Queen Quest, come on, Chillin'. Get involved. Get involved. Get involved. Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. What country comes to mind when you hear the following? Protesters confined to fenced-in so-called free speech zones. The government illegally spying on citizens and producing phony news reports. People imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners tortured and killed. And an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, journalists, and hospitals. We like to think of countries other than our own when we think of such crimes being committed. But the responsibility to call a halt to such abuses of power always lies with the citizens of the government involved. In this case, that is to say, with us, whether we like it or not. The United States Constitution contains a remedy for such abuses so central to our system of checks and balances that it appears in that document six times. That remedy? Impeachment. Our duty is to demand it from our members of Congress. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Reformation with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back, everybody. We got someone online here who wrote an incredible piece, and it's really shocking to me and to Lupe because it was actually posted on Huffington Post. You know, not to say that Huffington Post is part of any censorship program per se. Well, every now and again, a piece tends to slip under the wire, and Chris Williams. The name of his piece is America Owes African Americans More. Now, right along from the title, you got to kind of wonder why he was able to get on there. But when you read the rest of it, it's on point. It hits exactly what we talk about here on the show and what I hope you're talking about over at your dinner table when you're speaking with your family. And we're going to introduce Chris here, and we're going to ask him, you know, being that, as he put it himself when we were on the warm-up to this, all last week, we've been hit with the Paula Deen scandal. All last week and today, we're dealing with the Trayvon Martin murder case. We consider it to be a murder case over here. They're calling it a self-defense case in Florida. But I don't like to tell people what to think. You believe what you want to in that by looking at the information and sussing it out for yourself. A lot of things came out last week. Zoe Saldana doing blackface. You know how I feel about that. You know, there's a lot of questions. Well, one of the other things that's been coming up is the N-word. You know, and that's mostly because of Paula Deen. And, you know, all of that is interesting and all of that is newsworthy. But the real thing that gets me is the Voting Rights Act was just completely dismantled. Justice Roberts, you can go online and read his opinion piece. And Uncle Thomas Clarence, who did all his best. And as somebody who's Geechee, it does bothers me to my core that he's Geechee. I mean, he didn't even speak English until he was damn near 16 years old. And, you know, how could he sit there? How could he sit there and get rid of the Voting Rights Act when it was a Black Panther Party for Self-Defense court case that got him into law school? And I don't expect a lot of you to know that. I wouldn't have known it if it wasn't for someone like Chris Williams that put it out there. If the information doesn't get out there, we don't know. And like I said, he was able to get this one under the wire. So we're going to introduce him right now. So, Chris, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and, you know, a real honor. So thank you.
No, you know, thank you, man. Thank you for, you know, continuing to plug to try to get your pieces into the mainstream. And, you know, kudos to the Huffington Post for actually printing your work. Again, the title of the article is, or the editorial, I should say, America Owes African Americans More. So let me ask you, Mr. Williams, what does America owe the African in the United States?
Well, if people read my piece, I, you know, give a pretty detailed account of, you know, the laborious and arduous work that we've put into, you know, tilling the soil of this country providing the economic foundation for others to thrive off of, that really just begins to top everything off. We've been here as long as anyone else has. I'm talking about here in what's, you know, called the United States of America. We've been longing to be accepted and to accept, you know, first class citizenship, which is guaranteed under the Declaration of Independence in the U.S. Constitution. But for so long, whether it's through domestic terrorism or unjust laws being passed through state legislatures and even at a federal level to halt our progression. You know, in the piece, I talk about the strides that we've made and also the fact when the United States was fighting for independence, the first person to pass or die for the War of Independence was a man named Crispus Attucks in 1770. So we have just as much right to be considered citizens in this country, but you know, for too long, we've just keep suffering injustice after injustice. And last week really was when, you know, camel broke the straw's back, so to speak, for me anyway, when they voted down Section 4 and 5 of the Voting Rights Act. I had enough. I just had to write something, especially with the 237th birthday for the United States. I had to write something about the way blacks feel. And I'll tell you, I've gotten a lot of feedback from a lot of people, and not only blacks, but whites as well, who feel the same way. If you look around the world and you look around here in the United States, you know, people understand that we're not getting a fair shot. There's too many things that are going on to affect the way that we should be living in this country. We built this country. We should be able to profit the same way as other folks have been able to profit off of it. Not saying that we haven't made gains over the past, you know, few decades, but, you know, we have one political party in this country right now who are really wanting to turn the time back to the antebellum period in our history, where blacks were considered three-fifths of a person. So we really have more work to do. That's what I was really trying to say in the piece, and what particularly America owes to African Americans. They owe us respect, equality, and dignity under the laws that have been written for the past 200 years.
All right, well, let me ask you this, having having said that, there's a episode that can be viewed. It's currently available on YouTube. I don't know how long it's going to be there. It's a episode of the old Phil Donahue talk show, where what's called The Issue is Race. Daruba Bin Wahad was on the show. Sister Soldier was on the show. You know, the usual talking heads. And Alan Keyes, African Republican, was on the show. Some of you might remember Alan Keyes. He was unceremoniously dragged from a Republican presidential debate in Atlanta. He was talking about his constitutional rights as the Atlanta police dragged him away, took him into a patrol car, and dropped him on the worst side of the black side of Atlanta, with no cab, nowhere to go. You might remember him. Well, in any case, there was the, at that time, the mayor of Atlanta, sister, who said that she didn't care when Daruba Bin Wahad brought up what America has done. She said she didn't care what America has done as long as she got her cut. What do you say to the African people in the United States, those of the African diaspora in North America who have that attitude?
Wow.
It's like, what can you say, right?
Yeah, I've read the speech. Those folks are so lost. I don't know if you can get them back.
Yeah, like I said, this was a mayor of a major metropolitan, you know, city, who said to, you know, Black Panther, brother Daruba Bin Wahad, someone who spent 17, 18 years in prison, who was framed on the COINTELPRO, who brought up, as you brought up, the history of the United States. We're being local. We're talking about what the African has done in the United States, how the African got here, what the African has done since he's been here. He and she has been here. And then after this, where is the African? Where is our stake in the country? And, you know, a lot of these questions were brought up in your piece. And it's like, what do we say to those who don't feel that the African deserves any more than anyone else in America? Well, and when we say America, we're talking specifically about the United States.
Absolutely. Just from a historical standpoint, free labor was provided for a lot of these folks who still probably have slave money on their hands. Let's just be honest about it. You cannot provide you cannot say that African Americans aren't owed something for all those years. You know, our forefathers, foremothers toiled soil, produced all these goods and services, at times, you know, beaten, raped, maimed. I mean, folks really have to start following and understanding history to gain a larger perspective of where we are today. As far as African Americans go, in terms of this country, we are the stripes and stars on the flag. We have put in and contributed more to this country, probably more than anyone. We were the original immigrants, but you know, if you really know your history, we were here before we arrived in Jamestown. And also, the thing is, people have to get an understanding of not only have Black folks, and you know, starting out in the country's history, you know, they're white indentured servants as well. Black folks maintain a system of labor, free labor to provide the economic foundation for capitalism and for capitalism to thrive. But yet, you had slaves living in shacks, working around the clock to produce, you know, cotton, sugar, you know, all these different things that were exported and helped build the industries in the North as well. I mean, folks have to just read and do their homework. We were talking before, a lot of our young folks are, they just don't get it. You know, I'm not that old. I'm a young person myself. I consider myself to be young. I'm only 32. So I get it. And I want other folks to start getting it as well. As far as what we've contributed to the society and what is owed to us, you know, 40 acres and a mule was supposed to take effect after the Civil War during Reconstruction. But we all know what happened. During that time when we're supposed to get 40 acres and a mule, when we're starting to get a voice in political affairs, both in a local, state, and federal level. The Black Codes were instituted. A new form of slavery was launched called the convict leasing system in the South. Then you move into the turn of the century, 1900, when Black folks were actually starting to get some sort of wealth, I don't know if people are really familiar with how Black Wall Street, Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, that got burnt to the ground due to racism and race riots. So every time Black folks started to get some sort of progression, it was met with resistance, either in a violent way or through legislation. I mean, the way things have just been designed and how it's hampered the progress of African Americans, you know, yes, like I said before, there have been some gains made thanks in part to people like John Lewis, Congressman Lewis, and, you know, Dr. King, Malcolm X, James Farmer, Whitney Young, a list of people. But those things that they worked so hard for, you know, Republican Party now is really putting in work, real work, to undo all of the legacy that they left behind for us. So we have work to do.
You know, okay, being that you've written this piece and you said you've gotten a lot of feedback, has the question of reparations been raised in any of the feedback you've received?
Truthfully, none. I think the reason why that hasn't been brought up is because we all know that's probably never going to happen. Although, one thing that I would say is if reparations were to be, you know, paid in any form, I would go in the direction of either providing, you know, every Black child education, of providing them a way of achieving higher education at any university of their choice in this country. You know, only way to make this country, I guess, better would be to have a fully empowered and educated race of kids to actually, you know, help the economy, spread the economy on innovation. If you want to do that, or either take care of the debt, the overwhelming debt that so many students of color have, just take care, wipe that away so they can become, you know, productive citizens through the workforce. I mean, those are just, you know, two things I've thought about from a reparation standpoint. I know land, you know, there's not going to be any more land built or created. Land is really a source of money as well. But I don't think we'll ever get to a point where we're going to get to the 40 acres and the mule. But, you know, what are your thoughts on reparations?
Well, I'm kind of where you're at. I mean, I believe it's deserved, and I believe it should be used to, you know, uplift the, or at least build some sort of a underlying foundation for something else. But to give us funds or remuneration for past grievances to be able to do that works against their program. So, as you said, they're not going to do that. I mean, Barack Obama made it very clear when he was running for president that he didn't support reparations. He's never explained why, but he made it very clear he wasn't for reparations. But again, we're talking about somebody who boycotted the Durban conference against racism twice, you know, who has the beer summit with one of the talented 10, one of his own, gets in trouble with the police. Skip Gates, I'm referring to.
You're also talking about someone who hasn't met with the Congressional Black Caucus in over 2 years as well. So,
hey, he just went to Africa. I mean, he's on his way out, you know.
Right. When President Bush has done more in Africa than you have, that's not a good look.
That's not a good look, you know, and that says a lot. So, okay, hang on. We're speaking to author Chris Williams. He has a piece right now running in the Huffington Post called America Owes African Americans More. Much more. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're going to take a break for stations to identify themselves. Please stay tuned.
Intimidate the whole Black nation. Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginals.
I'm gonna stand until I can't stand no more. If I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts, but you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that, but most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
HIV Sankramit Harulai Maya Mamatara समाजमा सम्मानित जीवन जिउने वातावरण निर्माण गरौं
यो उनीहरूको अपेक्षा होइन अधिकार हो
रोगलाई तिरस्कार र बहिष्कार गरौं रोगीलाई होइन एचआईभी अरूलाई मात्र होइन तपाईँलाई पनि लाग्न सक्छ
सकारात्मक सोच स्वस्थ समाज अनि सही निर्णय नै सरल तथा सफल जीवन हो
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास
really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. if you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Hey, this is Ra LaMata.
And Donna from Apsai.
And you're listening to a
Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Word.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the Angry Indian, and we're speaking to author Chris Williams. He's got a piece going on right now in the Huffington Post that you really need to check out. He's talking about the conditions of Africans in the United States, and we're going to link to that when we publish this dispatch. And we were just talking about reparations before we took the last break, so I want to ask Brother Williams, you know, if reparations is not possible, mostly because we can't get our act together, and mostly because we have a large, powerful entity that's working against us that would not allow us to get our act together. You know, what else does the people do when they're being faced with this sort of animosity? Because, you know, we take that for granted, and we also, I feel, look at things like this far too emotionally, when we need to be objective and be clear-headed on these matters. What is it about the African, outside of everybody else in the world? Well, indigenous people, and of course the African is the original indigenous person, but, you know, at the same time, what is it about the African that puts us in such a state that we can be taken advantage of by Europeans? We can be taken advantage of by the Arab world. We can be taken advantage of by the Asian world. You know, what is it about us as a collective that makes us ripe for picking, you believe, as someone who's looking at this objective as a writer?
Wow. Wow, that's a really great question. It's that, you know, colonialism was a practice that really, well, even before then, I mean, you had the Arab slave trade even before colonialism.
That's right.
Just from a historical perspective.
Which a lot of black Muslims in the United States really don't like to admit to. Get very belligerent when you mention it.
And, you know, there are some that don't even know about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant earlier. People really got to start reading and do their homework. I mean, it's just ridiculous at this point. I don't know why we've been so ripe for the picking. It just seems like, you know, over the centuries, it's just been one thing after the other. And, you know, so much innovation and creation came out of Africa originally. It always tickles me when, you know, watching the news and people referring to Egypt as, you know, Middle East,
yeah.
No, it's North Africa. It's just like, what are you talking? And these are people, are professionally paid people who can't just look on a map and see Egypt is right there in North Africa. What's the problem? And, you know, a lot of stuff that the Greeks got was from Alexandria. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, so, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do want to mention to our listeners, Professor Martin Bernal passed away last week. the author of Black Athena, because this is where Brother Williams is moving into. Everything that he's talking about right now in terms of ancient African, ancient Arabian connections, that Afro-Arabian connection. Professor Martin Bernal, a British Jew, I should add, for those cultural nationalists out there that want to break everything down to black and white, to race.
Wow.
This was a white man. Three volumes. I have one. I've read that one. There's two others. Black Athena. It took me 2.5 years to fully understand what I was reading.
Yeah.
That's how heavy it is.
Yeah, I know it's probably heavy.
Sheikh Ant Diop took me about a year or so to grasp, right? To really grasp his level of work. But with Martin Bernal, he was dealing with etymologies. He's looking at language and explains exactly what you're talking about. That the Greeks, early Romans, relied on Africa. It was the breadbasket of the Roman Empire.
Absolutely. I would say absolutely.
You know, according to Aristotle and these folks, they sent their best, or they endeavored to travel to Africa to speak to the scholars with the plaited hair. You know, this is not me. Herodotus wrote this. This is not me. This is not conspiracy theory. This is why when I suggest to you, brothers, it's one thing to go to the black bookstore, but it's another thing to go to the black bookstore and actually do your own research and take it where it leads you. You know, and not be afraid to where it's going to take you. It opens way more doors than you might realize. I'm sorry, brother. Continue.
Oh, absolutely. I just, you know, second your thoughts there. You know, folks really have to understand what it's all about. I was intrigued by my culture and heritage, you know, from a young child. You know, my mom really instilled that into me, you know, and it just got, you know, stronger as I got older. I think that's, I guess, for some folks that's innate. Others, you know, you really gotta, you know, grab them by the neck and really get them to understand.
Drop squat.
You know, it's bigger than you.
Drop squat on. Well, let me ask you that. I mean, we already know that the education system, the mainstream education system, even though there are individuals within the system that are trying to make a progressive change as to, the, say, you know, the positive thing, they're trying to move forward. They're making progressive changes. And we see what's happening to the education system in the United States, and we see what's happening to it under this administration. We understand that Chicago pretty much... Detroit doesn't even exist as a city anymore. So we know that the educational system there is bad for the majority of our people that are living there. How do people on the grassroots that have a concern, who are not, running personal agendas, who are not running necessarily religious agendas, where are the real grassroots, the original Marcus Garveys, where are they today in the black diaspora in the United States?
Yeah, that, to me, it just doesn't seem like, I mean, we have our scholars, of course, and we have some really brilliant ones, but, you know, there's, you gotta make the distinction between scholar and activist. Marcus Garvey was an activist. You know, in some ways, you know, people may think he was a scholar as well, which is fine. But what Marcus Garvey was about, he was about action. I think a lot of times these days, there's more talking than doing. And as far as, you know, as the leaders of this, you know, of our community nowadays, I'm trying to put into words, you know, why things are so bad, and yet we have so few people speaking up. I don't know if it's because people have just been brainwashed. You know, we can stand in line to get a pair of LeBrons or Jordans, but we can't vote during local primaries and things of that nature. Who makes the laws in our states and in the country? But as far as leadership goes, you know, people make reference to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and folks of that nature, Mark Muriel, who's the head of the Urban League. You know, I think they suit their purpose. You know, to be truthful about it, Al Sharpton's show on MSNBC, besides social networking, they were really active in this Trayvon Martin case. He was really the first program on cable news that I saw that dedicated his program every night to the Trayvon Martin case, and then slowly started to build. I think he got the cue from social media, and he just took and ran with it, and then he got really involved. So with him having a position on TV at a major cable news network, that's important. But as far as, you know, other folks who are, you know, in leadership positions and, you know, the sense of community and, you know, relationship building, you know, we have people, as you know, Dr. King, Malcolm X, James Farmer, Whitney Young, and Roy Wilkins, you know, just a whole, you know, plethora, gamut of folks who are about uplifting Black people out of their present condition, for hopes that, you know, in the future we would be able to really carry the mantle. But for some reason, it just seems like we've dropped that mantle. And I don't know if it's just because of the circumstances we're in. Everyone is, you know, running around with their heads cut off because of all these demands being put on us from not only from an employment standpoint, you know, the war on drugs, that has a lot to do with it. You have 40% constitute 40% of war on drugs program. So it's, we're missing a lot of males who could eventually become leaders, but instead they're packed behind bars like a bunch of sardines because of a program that's been ineffective, to say the very least. I'm being kind about that. So as far as leadership goes, it's just, I think it's a matter of people getting focused on all, there's just so many issues hurting our community right now. I mean, for goodness sakes, we had 34 people shot in Chicago yesterday. It's crazy. They call it Chirac, but there's a lot of Chiracs around in urban areas in the city. But yet, you know, we're considered the problem. They stop and frisk us. And it's just, God, it's just so much. And maybe that's why that the leadership is lacking, because no one, there's so much to attack and no one knows where to start. But see, that's, we have to be better about that as a community. You know, the Black church used to be really integral in that movement, but even the Black church is lost. So if they're lost, you know, a lot of our good leaders, great leaders, have come out of the church. If it wasn't, you know, Baptist church, it was out of the Nation of Islam, you know. So
but see, one of the things to me though that needs to be brought up, say like the shop. You know, I've been looking at Sharpton. I'm from the East Coast, from Philly. He was up there in New York, and I, you know, would go back and forth between Newark and, you know, between parents, you know, down again. And, you know, you hear him. He's all over the place. But it's always clear to me that he was an opportunist, you know. And I'm not saying he hasn't mellowed out, but he also has a dodgy history in terms of not progressive politics, but radical Black politics, in terms of his being a snitch.
He's been an interesting figure, to say the least.
To say the least, yeah. Because see, last week he was defending Paula Deen last week.
Yeah, Jesse Jackson too.
Oh, see, I didn't know about Jesse, but I'm not surprised about that either. And see, and the thing about Jackson is, you know, a lot of people have come down on Jackson. You know, I'm like, hey, you know, don't really come down on brother, because when he was out there, what we all did, See, you know, that's one. See, I remember him being camped out in front of the National Mall for a year, the Poor People's March in the early 70s.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people don't remember that. And I remember, you know, watching him get beat up, you know what I'm saying, on the news by folks. So, you know, a lot of people need to understand where he's coming from. He was never a radical. He was always part of the mainstream. So you can't expect him to come out and say anything particularly crazy. And, you know, he's still, and a lot of people still have to remember that he's still fighting the, I don't want to say fighting, but, you know, he's still dealing with the Hymietown comment that he made.
Yeah. And that was over 20 years ago.
Well, I don't know if you know the background. We're just talking now because we'll tie this up in a minute. But, Milton Coleman, a nobody ever heard of minor league black reporter down at the Washington Post, I believe it was at that time. He was talking to him personally. Well, actually, I heard he wasn't even talking to him personally. He was talking to somebody else, but he happened to be in the circle, you know. And he went over and told the white reporter what he said real quick. And the white reporter is the one that wrote the story. But he got, well, he's the president of the Journalistic Association now. I mean, that was his payback, I suppose, for that.
Wow.
He rode high from doing that. Now, I've never defended Jackson for saying that. Because I remember some Republicans that called me one time in the bar. They're like, well, what about Jesse Jackson, huh? What about Hymietown, huh? And I'm like, what? Like, you give a fuck about Jews? You know? I say, you might give a damn about Israel politically, but let's be honest, you don't give a fuck about Jews. And that's why they act the way that they do, because they know that you don't care about them. You know, so don't act like you give a damn about, you know, Judeophobia all of a sudden. You know, this is the only thing you can pull on Jackson, really. And I don't defend what the hell he said. Yeah, it was a stupid thing to say. But the thing about it is he also said that in confidence, you know, in a private conversation. That wasn't meant to be broadcast. That guy went all out of his way to make sure that everybody knew about that. You know, so I guess what I'm trying to come into here now is when we're talking about progressivism, we're talking about these particular personalities and the types of personalities and, like, you know, if a cat gets published like you, I'm sure there's a handful of black guys who haven't been published yet. They're going to say that you're grandstanding, right? How do we make the difference between somebody who's actually trying to, you know, identify the real problems and trying to stimulate a discourse that will engender change, as opposed to somebody who's riding high as being the Negro of the moment who can explain to white America what's happening in terms that they can digest while not actually saying anything at all?
Just for me, I'm very direct when I write. You know, I make no apologies. What I write is how I feel. There are some writers, you know, young black writers out here like myself who are the same way. I like your term, Negro for the moment. I've heard that term before, as it pertains, you know, really popular writers. To me, the public really needs to make a distinction on, you know, who they think is authentic and who is inauthentic.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I do want to say though, you know, when we start, just for, you know, clarity's sake, when we start using the term authentic and inauthentic, I think we need to be careful because, you know, I'm really mixed and motherfuckers will say I'm inauthentic just because of that. Whereas I consider myself to be in the movement and they're not.
Right.
So, you know, how are we defining blackness? Are we defining blackness as a connection, a visceral connection with our African identity and Africa itself as the motherland? Not necessarily talking about Afrocentrism, but just, you know, being cognizant of that connection? Or are we talking about simply being black people caught within an overwhelmingly white environment? And just simply having to deal with that?
Yeah, you make a good point. I think, all writers, you know, all black writers, you know, subscribe to blackness, obviously. You know, people, you know, on Twitter, you know, people make their feelings felt about certain writers and what they're writing about. And then other writers whose work they really appreciate. I guess that's what I was trying to say about authentic and inauthentic. But every writer has an authenticity to their style and voice. Just others are more measured than some. But as far as, you know, writing in terms of, you know, we can go from here, for, you know, black writers and just black people in general, what black writers can do to motivate, encourage, and galvanize, black people to, you know, really try to start up another civil rights movement, because I think that's what's afoot here in the next few years. If these, you know, Supreme Court rulings and more, you know, massive unemployment, you know, I'm not sure if you know anything about the parents plus student loans issue that's going on that's affecting, funding all these HBCUs. But these are really, really significant issues. These are like legacy issues too.
Yeah.
HBCUs have been around for over 100 years. And parent plus student loan issue is a big issue. A lot of students, low income students, are getting denied those loans that they were previously approved for. Now they can't go back to school, so thus that affects the funding that HBCUs get. It's very, as I said before, there's a lot of work to do, and as me being a writer, it's imperative that I write about the realities of what's going on out here for, you know, not just black people, but all people, but in particularly black people, because we're suffering the most. You know, anytime you have, you know, double-digit unemployment, you know, double that of everyone else, high school dropout rates at 40% and 50% in some cities. You have multiple school closings around urban areas, you know, Philly. So you close 23 schools, but you got $400 million to build a prison, okay? That's a problem. So we have, I think writers such as myself, we have to really have truth and honesty and sincerity about how we approach the subjects we talk about that affect our communities each day. So the broader audience can really start to understand, you know, what it's going to take for us to have a fair shot. Because right now we don't have one. And I think that's part of my duty as being an African-American writer, writing for these different publications, to really lend my voice and be the voice of, you know, almost voice of the voiceless, and really, you know, put people on notice that, you know, this is what it is and we need to fix it.
Well, let me ask you, as a journalist, and being that, you know, we were talking about the other people, the talking heads, that by one way, shape, form, or another represent us, whether we like it or not, where are they on issues of consequence? Like, say, Assad al-Shakur being placed on the terrorist watch list over a police brutality case that happened how long ago?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jesse Jackson, where is he on this? With the Black Congressional Caucus, where are they on this? They haven't made a statement yet, as far as I'm aware. You know, we're hearing from the usual cultural nationalists, but they haven't said anything new in about 30 years. You know, it's like, where is the Black America going under a black president when someone like this can be placed on the terrorist watch list, and you have plenty of white people that can be placed on that list? The American Nazi Party has a lobbying office now in Washington, D.C. How can they possibly put Assad al-Shakur on that list?
Yeah. It's really baffling to me how bad black people are suffering under our first black president. A friend of mine who covers Capitol Hill, who happens to be an African American, she was telling me all the stuff that goes on Capitol Hill and how he doesn't meet with, you know, certain black leaders, and, you know, all the, you know, animosity that's going on up there right now. I mean, you just look at the condition of black folks in the country. You know, we have, at least on my pages, we have open discussions about, you know, what exactly is going on. It just seems like you almost get to a point like, can it get any worse?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, it could. I mean, you see what's going on in Turkey and Egypt right now. It could get worse. Yeah. Doesn't have to get worse. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm not into extreme measures. You know, I believe in the protests and all that. But when you see that the protest isn't working anymore, you know, you have to take another tack. And that doesn't mean that it needs to go, you know, or off the deep end. You know, if we change our entire minds in terms of how we deal with the situation here, in terms of how we think and how we deal with ourselves in terms of getting organized, see, that I think to them is more threatening than anything else. You know, the idea of putting up a free clinic, you know, when I was young, that was considered to be extremely threatening, a free clinic in a black neighborhood. You know, that was full of, you know, people who had absolutely no medical insurance. That was considered radical. When are we going to get back to that mindset?
I don't know if you saw the story yesterday, but Shaquille O'Neal is building a health clinic in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where kids can get free health care, period. So we need more athletes, more people in the entertainment industry, you know, our folks to really start giving back as well. I saw that story yesterday and I was just like, well, yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, I mean, where you been? You know, it's like somebody came up to me a few weeks ago and said, yeah, man, Kanye West finally got this new track, man, New Slaves, man. He's talking about what you're talking about. I'm like, yeah, but how long did it take him to do it?
Right.
You know, right now is economically in their favor to put out something like this. But the damage has already been done. So it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, depending on who you talk to, and I'm talking to white scientists about this. They say, man, you guys will never be able to regenerate. Not in this country. And he's like, I hate to be like that, but I'm telling you straight. He says, you will never be able to get whatever your numbers back. I mean, remember when the population was supposed to be like a little below 12%?
Yeah.
Man, it's below 10 now.
Wow.
And it's dropping every year. Well, you know, you got disease. AIDS is the number one killer now of black males, right? Then you got street violence. You got 21 and 23-year-olds having major strokes and heart attacks and shit, you know. And they want to blame marijuana and cocaine, and I'm sure that's got something to do with it, just abusing your body. But a lot of it has to do with the emotional and mental stress that people are putting up with and trying to cope. And it's damaging us, you know, physically.
Yeah,
A lot of folks are not really looking at that. They're like, yeah, well, he's got a good body, man. Look at him. He works out. He can bench, you know, 485, man, 30 reps. I'm like, that's cool, but if his blood is bad, if he's not eating vegetables because he's eating McDonald's all the goddamn time. I mean, you know, I mean those things, like for example, food, we're not taking very seriously. I mean, how damaged are we now by our diet? And you know, it's not really a whole lot of choice with us. I mean, the last time I visited home, there was no. There were no vegetable stands. You know, the vegetable market was on the other side of town, in the white side of town.
Yeah.
Right? The farmer market, right?
Yeah, and you know how all the highways in these different cities and towns are sectioned off.
Yeah.
White, black.
It's the apartheid wall that you can't see, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you a final question, man. Where can people find your work out here? Because I know you finally got a piece here on Huffington Post. Where else can we find you?
I also do a lot of music writing as well, so that people can find my work at Wax Poetics. I write for Ebony pretty regularly. Also, The Atlantic, as well as the Huffington Post. That's pretty much it for right now. I do some political writing from time to time on a site called politic365.com. People can find me on Twitter at CWMSWrites, and my website is ChrisWilliamsWrites.com. And I'd like to thank you again for having me on the show. I really appreciate the invite, and I've enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, yeah, thank you for being on, and I hope we get you back on, because I'm sure the racism isn't going to stop.
No.
We got a lot of work to do, and it's got to get beyond the talking heads. I'm not against our brothers and sisters, even though I may have my criticisms. Someone tried to get me to say a whole lot of things about Minister Farrakhan the other day. I have my differences with Mr. Farrakhan, but, it's not about, sitting here, just sitting talking about, this one's no good, you should follow this one. We all really need to get together and stop the grandstanding and just get down to brass tacks so we can deal with our situation.
Yeah.
So, this is Chris Williams. Hope you heard his information. Do check him out. Like I said, go and check that piece out. I got it on my Twitter feed. It's all over the place. America owes African Americans more. It's real simple. It's real direct. It's real clear. For those of you who don't like to read, I don't want to hear your excuses. It's not going to take you that long. J-Lo will still be there. All that. Go check this out. Find out what the hell is happening. Get educated. Educate the people around you. And let's do something. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Peace to all. And as usual, if you want the man to get up off your back, all you've got to do is stand up. Sigit.
Internet radio for smarter originals.
Got the knowledge and wisdom to build and create that which is necessary to add on to my site, my family. Now, part being black power, anti-white, pro-black, outside white, we don't go along with that for a different reason. But I am black power, because black is that nucleus within the individual man. Black is that sun in the universe, and that sun in the universe is that which gives me the power to be who I am. And everything that exists within that sun on the universe above exists within myself, and that's what I teach back to my babies. We are all, and you can't spell love without spelling all. All that exists within us. Peace.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white. In many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
This is The Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
General Clapper, would you agree on saying that having access to public information is not an act of espionage?
Yes.
Would you, with your experience in intelligence matters, describe Cuba as a military threat for the United States?
Absolutely not. Cuba does not represent a threat.
Did you find any evidence indicating that Geraldo Hernandez was trying to obtain secret information?
No, not that I recognize.
Did you, General Clapper, come across any secret national defense information that was transmitted to Cuba by Geraldo Hernandez or the other defendants?
Not that I remember, no.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm Danny Glover, activist and actor. We just did a scene from the trial of the Cuban Five, who are doing long sentences for fighting terrorism. I hope that you would join us in this effort to support them and free them. It is a very just cause.
I'm not General Clapper. My name's Peter Coyote. I'm an actor and a politically engaged citizen. I hope you'll take a few minutes to learn something about the case of the Cuban Five. It's a grievous injustice and a stain on our national honor.
Absolutely convinced that this nation is finally headed in the right direction. Our economy is growing again. We are adding jobs again. America's moving forward again.
President Obama wants $50 billion to create jobs for construction of roads, railways, and runways. Already, billions have been committed in new initiatives such as Social Innovation Fund, economic stimulus, and broadband. And hundreds of millions are going to border security. Yet, security and jobs for whom? Construction jobs mostly employ men. The new funding initiatives have principally benefited institutions and government. And border security seems to be for U.S. transnationals operating maquilas and those seeking to profit from the violence and poverty in Ciudad Juarez and Mexico. But what about security and jobs for women workers on the U.S.-Mexico border? Why invest in infrastructure benefiting transnational corporations and not in community-led development? For nearly two decades, first with NAFTA and now with the war on drugs, border women have seen their livelihoods, communities, and futures written off as unfortunate but necessary casualties by the companies they made rich, left to live and die amidst the underdevelopment of the border. Yet, women have refused to accept this fate. Organized, fierce, and resilient, they're pursuing their own version of security and employment. La Mujer Obrera in El Paso is one example. Through their daycare, restaurant, festival marketplace, museum, media center, and adult education programs, the women are creating genuine border security, real economic development. And they have extensive plans for additional development, including schools, housing, and health programs. Like La Mujer Obrera, there are other low-income women on the border who have the vision and drive needed to create spaces where cultural arts and grassroots microenterprises can flourish, restoring economy, pride, and dignity in their neighborhoods. Their efforts are the stuff that economists, feminists, and reformers tout as vital to build sustainable national security and development. Yet today, the women find themselves fighting their hardest battle yet, sustainability in the weakest U.S. economy in decades, and a future being designed without them. Local and national media have focused on border violence and security issues, but have missed the solutions that border women are ready to implement. Public-private initiatives need to prioritize border women's efforts to restore their communities from the damaging effects of international trade policies. As Gloria Steinem said when she visited La Mujer Obrera, there is no safe space for women. We have to create that space. We have to build that community. The conditions of women on the border are urgent, and women on the border are demanding justice and equity now. For more information, contact La Mujer Obrera.
You're curious or confused? Get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Idle No More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people, get inspired,
take action,
and become a part of the solution.
It's my future,
your future,
our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our Earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Listen to Angry Indian Radio. He is not only for Indians, but he is also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to them.
Thank you for those kind words. Habari Ghani brothers and sisters, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It was a great deal of feeling that I'd be here tonight in Seattle. In spite of all the jokes I make about it, I have a long history with some of the people here in Seattle. For a long time, Zakiya here, I remember Zakiya as a very young person, a very young student, who came into our independent school in the 1960s. And out of that school, we lost 17 students who were her classmates. 17 young black brothers who were students of mine. Fred Hampton probably being the most famous one. So I stand in blood before you, and I take that very seriously. I'm a very feeling person. I have a very great deal of love for black people, because unlike most blacks who you read about and hear about, I've never experienced all those negative things from black people. I've been extremely well loved throughout my life. I've never had all the things that happened to me that have happened to, that I read about happening to other black people. And so I've dedicated my life to just one objective, and that is to assist in the liberation of the minds of black people, and therefore liberation then of their bodies. That is my sole reason for being. And it is the only reason, of course, that I would appear before you tonight. And I would hope that we would have a chance to really understand one another. Most certainly I would say things that will alienate some of you because of your personal lifestyle. That is not my intent. I have no fight with black people. I never in my life have used words like Tom. I never in my life have used words like nigger. I'm not that type of person. I have one enemy, and that enemy is the white race. No other enemies do I have. And therefore, I'm at total war with that enemy, the enemy who has for 362 years waged unrelenting war against my people. And I have no time to have internal conflict. I do take issue with brothers because of their political position, but it's not personal. It's a political position. And so with that being a background, I'd like to say to you that the most important thing that has happened to me was left out of the present, of the introduction, inadvertently. And that was the fact that I grew up, I was born and raised in an all-black town in Alabama. For the first 17 years of my life, I had all-black teachers, all-black role models, black people who loved me, who protected me, who raised me, who fed me, who nurtured me, and also who educated me. And I would like to say, as I say all the time, that there's a difference between education and training, and therefore, the difference between education and training, I'm fortunate because I was educated by black people, and I was trained at the University of Chicago. Unfortunately, people, black people, as part of the Mill style process, black people are more impressed with the fact that I was trained at the University of Chicago than the fact that I was educated by black people in Alabama. And with that, I'm going to take a sort of different tag with men aside tonight because, and I'm going to lay it in some ways that all of us can sort of understand, and although we may link. This will be published in about 3 weeks. In about 3 weeks, Third World Press will publish what I'm going to talk to you about tonight. And I'm just going to introduce it. And you'll have to get the publication from Third World Press, and it will be out here. I would also like to say to Karumu and all the other brothers and sisters who I worked with over the years that I really appreciate being here and being loved so by them. I mean, there have been many times I've been places which my weapon was not as good as it was tonight. And in fact, there was a time when I had to almost run out of the place. They were always stood tall and stood behind me. Tonight I'm going to talk about menticide, and I'll start by telling you one of the problems in talking about a theory. One of the most difficult tasks of a black scholar, one of the most difficult tasks of a black person who thinks, is to be able to analyze the influence of racism, a racist, on black behavior and attitude, be able to do that analyzation, and at the same time escape the almost irresistible Western scholarship protective barrier. Western scholarship in the Western world, that is their protection. They have a barrier, and they call it scholarship. And it protects them so well that even when you begin to study racism, you end back up studying the victim, doing an analysis of their victim. That's what is happening. So there's no question that this analysis of the victim methodology has been a major scientific development of white scientists because it effectively leads away from the cause of our condition, which is white pathology. It leads you away from that once you get into it. Because the way the scholarship is set up. One of the results is that the position is usually taken that one should not even imply to the black masses our truly weak position for fear of immobilizing them. In other words, you shouldn't talk about all the conditions of blacks because you immobilize them, which are a condition which already exists. While others take the position that whites have power over blacks all. Now this is due to the all-powerful but non-existent white concept of free will. Free will, which has us in all sort of trouble. All sort of trouble, this idea that you got free will. Namely, that people always have choices, and you have choices, since you have free will. Therefore, you can be held responsible for your behavior. And that free will, of course, as I spoke to last night, that free will, what it leads to then, it leads to a great deal of negative behavior. and it leads to rugged individualism. Therefore, to give you a type of analogy, and I'm not trying to be humorous. I know many things I say are humorous, but I like to use analogies as African people have done throughout history. Is that the analogy I have is that whites have a fight over deck chairs on the Titanic. Got a fight over deck chairs on the Titanic while they have taken the lifeboats and gone. And some brothers and sisters want to argue on what class we're in. So we had a brother like Brother Wilson back at the University of Chicago, who's the head of the sociology department, as I said last night, who wrote this book, The Decline and Significance of Race. Race is declining in significance, now it's class and economics. And, of course, the mere fact that the brother is married to a white girl means that race declines every night in significance, especially when they go to bed. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm very aware of what happens when you expose the human personality to dangerous stimuli. I'm a very serious behavior scientist. I'm very aware of that. However, there comes a time when the risk of exposure is insignificant when compared to the alternative. And to paraphrase a type of mental health truth, which is a mental health truth, the greatest pathology in the world, the greatest sickness in the world, is for people to believe in something just because they wish it to be so. That's the greatest pathology you can have. For you to believe in something just because you wish it to be so. And that's what most of us are. For example, if you take suicide, let's deal with that for a minute because that's what the publication will be about. And I want to use that to deliver this. In the not too distant past, suicide in the black community was virtually non-existent. In fact, when our comedians were really comedians, they used to joke about it. How can a black commit suicide jumping out of a basement window? Things like that, you know. The fact that the black committed suicide by attacking the policeman's club with his head. Things like that, you know. If somebody in my town where I grew up, if somebody come up talking about somebody killing himself, everybody be looking for who killed him. But that's a further understanding if you begin to do this analysis. One of the things I have to say right away, and then maybe this will give you some understanding of where I'm from, coming from. The most serious mistake you can make, along with that greatest pathology, the most serious mistake you can make is to try to use white definitions, to try to define and understand black phenomena, black behavior. The most serious thing. To use white definitions. He who defines rules. If you accept my definition of the world, I will rule you. And so you see, look here. We're in this science lab. No question about it. Look here. See, since I've been in school, they don't even add any more stuff to that table. The table wasn't bad enough, hard enough as it is. Now they got something else they're about talking about. Now, what they tell you, oh no, Dr. Wright, this is objective. This is science. You know what science is? A group of white men and women getting in a room and say, this is the way the world is. If you disagree with us, we'll kill you or we'll flunk you. That simple. So this is no more objective than anything else in the world. This table up here is some science and white people gotten together and said, this is science. Here's a definition of this, here's a definition of that, here's that. And let me tell you about definitions. They do not have to correspond to any reality. As long as they are useful in understanding some phenomena. That's the whole thing about science. Science does not have to deal with reality. Astronomy cannot prove anything. No one's been out there and touched a star. No one can, but they can infer. And then once you accept that definition, then you have a science called astronomy. Brothers and sisters got astrology. What sign are you? I knew that was some reason we couldn't get along. They even dropped that one on us. Astrology. What sign are you? And I had some students in the free school once to do a research. I want you all to get on the L, which is the subway. And I want you all to get on the L. And I want you all to where the blacks ride. Because, you know, unlike you all, most of you have not been to Chicago and bred into a cultural shock. Because we got block after block, mile after mile, and none but black folks. We got more black folks in two housing projects than you all got in the entire Northwest. So when I talk about black folks, I'm talking about black folks, you know. And we don't have that. Who are we? Why are we here? You know. So I had them to get on the subway with all the blacks ride and pick up the newspapers and bring them back to class the exact way they brought. They picked them up on the air. So exact way they picked them up, bring them back to class. We're doing this research. Sure enough, every paper that they picked up on that subway, and I mean they picked them up, the papers were about 10, 15 cents. Every paper they picked up was either turned to Ann Landers or turned to the astrology page. Astrology page. So right every day, if you notice, watch this. Whenever we get papers, that's how serious people, that's how they are menticiders, programmed up. And menticiders, I told you, is defined, as the sister told you, is defined as the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind, with the ultimate purpose being the extermination of that group. He who controls minds controls behind. He who controls the head, controls the brain, controls behavior. Very simple. Nothing complex about that. So you have blacks, if you look on the paper, they'll turn straight past the front page. Stop at Ann Landers, and then go to the astrology page, and then put the paper down. Put the paper down. And even men of you, I'm not serious here, carry on serious discussion about astrology. Now let's just deal with that mental style process. How can you deal with astrology when they admit that Julius Caesar decided to put a month in? You know, here they screwed it up so much that we got February, 28 days. And by the way, that's our month. They gave us the shortest month in the year. And I'm making a suggestion here tonight, and I hope you carry it on. Let us start having in January 1st, because I'm getting tired of traveling for 30 days every year. Let us start in January 1st, I'm very serious, having Black History Year and White History Month, White History Week. Seriously. Let's stop Black History Month. Let's stop it all together. It's time to cut off the nonsense of this. Why should we study Black History 1 month out of a year and we Black folks? That's menticide. You don't hear Italian month, History Month. You don't hear Irish History Month, Jewish History Month. Number one, they ain't got no history. But anyway, you don't hear. Yes, they do. Let me stop you. Yes, they do have you. Yes, they do.
There's a camera across the street, supposed to be protecting me, storing every little file. Make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite, make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove, think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. I was indoctrinated here. Constitution, Paul Revere. And I'm not trying to be disloyal, but I ain't dying for your oil. And there's a camera on the bus. Are you with them? Are you with us? Surveillance at the traffic light, every friggin' megabyte. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free FBI. If they arrest you, please don't lie. Tell them you paid to hear me sing. Tell them you saw everything. And freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Tonight. I'm trying to bust your groove. Think it's time for me to move. Freedom isn't free.